Welcome to the British History Podcast. If you love British history, then you are definitely in the right place. My name is Philippa, and I will be taking you through British history, the people, the events, the intrigue. Some of the stories you may think you know, but you don't know them in the way I tell them. And then hopefully, I will also be able to introduce you to something new too. Now, this podcast is free, and it always will be. But if you would like more History Lover benefits, then please consider coming and joining me over on Patreon at patreon.com/British History. But for now, let's get into today's episode.
Every so often, a book catches my eye that I don't really have to think about buying. I already know that I'm going to love it before I've even purchased it. And this is one such book. It's called Abandoned London. And it's politely termed a coffee book, though I think that what that actually means is an adult picture book, because as with all coffee books, it's absolutely bursting with images. I think it's over 200, in fact, which are a collection of abandoned sites in one of the best known cities of the world, London, and each has its own stories and secrets to tell. So I am delighted to be talking to the author of this book today, Katie Wignall. And Katie is a multi-award-winning London history blogger, Blue Badge tour guide, and if you don't know, follow her already on Instagram, please do, because it's a brilliant, you're brilliant on Instagram, Katie. It's at Look Up London. So I would thoroughly recommend you do that. So hi, Katie, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. You're welcome. So before we get going on some of the sites, because there's a few that I want to sort of delve, I would love to talk to you about all of them, but like there's quite a few. So I've chosen a few to delve into with you. But before I do that, I wanted to ask you first, what made you want to create this book?
So I'll be completely honest that I was actually just approached by the publishers. So it's part of actually a big series of abandoned places worldwide, abandoned war sites and things like that. So it is part of a kind of franchise, I suppose. And the publishers, Amber, asked me to help with the London version, basically. And so they presented me with all of these photos of London, and it was then up to me to kind of add tidbits and information, historical background, and then also context in the chapters as you make your way through the book as well. And they very kindly let me include some of my images shoehorned in there as well.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. So you got to choose most of the sites, or?
Actually, a lot of the sites were already chosen. Some of them I'd never even heard of before. The magic of London is this massive city where there's always something to learn.
Oh, wow. So it was a bit of an exploration for you as well. That's great.
Totally. And it was interesting, actually, because the period of writing and researching the text for the book was actually during the first lockdown. And so I wasn't able to travel to these places, or, you know, going out and about was limited. So sometimes it was actually a bit of detective work to find out where these images were taken, you know, where these vantage points was, and then deciding what to write about for them.
Oh, wow. Well, that's really fascinating. So, I mean, there's so many sites in this book. And like I say, I would love to dig into the stories of many of them. Because as with all good coffee books, the writing, I know you were quite limited, weren't you, in space as to what you could put.
Yeah, I think it's any sort of about 50 words, you know, because the highlights are really the images. And so sort of like guiding, really, you're always curating, you're choosing what do I need to say and what can I possibly leave out, and sometimes it's quite painful.
Yeah, I bet it's almost like just having a tweet per site almost. It's really, yeah, not much longer,
exactly,
is it?
Yeah.
So what I've done is I've chosen the ones that I found myself drawn to the most, and I found that they were the ones that were once a hub of human activity, you know, so perhaps they were central to people's work life or social life. And now, I mean, they could have been their homes. One of them is a home we're going to look at. In fact, I think two are homes. And now obviously they're just lying empty. And I find, I don't know if you found that, but that's, they're the ones that really draw me, the ones that were so central to people's lives, and now they're just gone. They're just empty.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with you on that. That is the draw of these abandoned places, because abandoned suggests that they were once occupied. Mm. And so by going to them and seeing them as these kind of empty shells, you get this ghost-like feeling of all of the people that have passed through them through history. And so I totally agree. The ones that really stayed with me, and I had to, you know, curate down what I was going to say the most, were these places that were once full of activity, either as homes or as businesses. And now, you know, are these like quite eerie places if you ever do get a chance to go inside them.
That's a really good point, actually. Yeah, it's that eeriness, that feel it. There was once people there, that, well, ghosts, like you say, it's sort of a not technically a ghost, but that energy that was once there. So let's get on to the first place then I'd like to ask you about, and that's Haggerston Public Baths. Now, this caught my eye because I used to be a lifeguard at my university pool, and the building and the pool were in this Victorian public baths. So when I saw this, I was immediately drawn to it, and I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about, you know, what public baths were used for. You know, were there a lot of them in London, and if you know, what the particular fate of Haggerston was.
Yeah, so it's hard really to overstate how important these public baths were. They really proliferated over London, especially in the more overcrowded, impoverished areas, including Haggerston and the East End and in South London as well. So these were public buildings, which gave people that typically didn't have any running water or bathrooms as we know them today, gave them a place where they could wash themselves. But like all public buildings, you know, they're far more than that. They're somewhere to socialize and to have this kind of shared community space as well. So we tend to see this at the end of the 1800s, early 1900s. London expands hugely in the 19th century, going from, I mean, about 1 million population to almost 6 million. So it's a huge boom. And this was one of the ways that the kind of welfare state was trying to look after the population.
So let me just, I'm going to open up the book and show people who, am I allowed to do this, by the way? I better check with you.
I think so.
Really quickly.
Is in the context of the book.
I mean, there's one thing I noticed as well is there's always graffiti, isn't there? The graffiti artists have always managed to get inside whatever closed buildings there was.
Yeah, and you know, the irony is a lot of these places are closed to the public, but of course we have these photos. So some people have been able to get in. I'm hugely in admiration of the urban explorers that are far more brave than me, who have actually gone inside these places when they're closed to the public.
And of course, although that technically is, you know, obviously not allowed, I don't even know, it might be on the illegal scale, but without that, we wouldn't have this record.
No, and also it sort of forms another function in that when people realise how beautiful they are inside and those images are shared widely, it really galvanises people to then save them as heritage sites as well. So it kind of, by tweaking the laws, not that I'm condoning it, you know, you sometimes help preserve these spaces. And this is what's interesting, you know, with Haggerston, because the story, like so many of the places featured in the book, is ongoing. There are plans to renovate and to restore the baths, not sadly as baths themselves.
Oh, that would be a shame. I'd love to have seen that. It's made me wonder whether the place I used to work still exists. I need to find out. Why don't we move on then? Because you've there said about it then makes people wish or aware of these places, and then that the impetus to try and preserve them. But one of the places I wanted to ask you about, people have been aware of it and have tried to save it, and I believe it hasn't been successful. And that's a place called Dollis Hill House. It looks like it was really grand. And again, I will just flash at the photos in case I'm not allowed. But the scars of staircases always get me in the wall, where you can see where the staircases once were. And it really looks like it was a grand building. But what's the story here?
Yeah, so this was a Victorian building, or just slightly early 1800s, and it was a grand kind of country estate house surrounded by Dollis Hill Park. I believe it was 2012 that it finally sort of lost the battle of saving it and has been completely demolished. So actually, again, one of the ironies that you see in the book is that these photos are actually the only testaments of some of these buildings that survive in London today. You can't actually physically see them. Again, this is one of the places, unfortunately, I wasn't able to visit because of lockdown. And so you can imagine my shock and horror, finding it, and then actually to go through and Google Street View and find that it no longer exists. They've done sort of something relatively nice in the park, in which they've outlined the kind of ground plan of the house, and there are some bits of walls, but really, yeah, nothing substantial that you could actually stand inside.
And this was once a place where prime ministers were entertained, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Gladstone. Yes. So, I mean, like these fabulous sort of country estates across London in the areas that used to be traditionally more kind of rural and outside of the city. This was a private kind of mansion house, and it's kind of devastating to see it having been demolished.
So let's go from Manor House to the other end of the housing spectrum. It's a place called Haygate Estate in Walworth. And anyone who's a fan of Call the Midwife will probably be familiar of the story about the attempts, I think it was in the 1960s, basically to get people into modern accommodation, but in a lot of people in a small area, and we get these high rise blocks. We call them flats, other countries I think people call, other cultures call them apartments, but we call them flats. And these multi-residential buildings, low cost, and they're obviously modern in their day, but over time these have become much less desirable places to be, badly maintained, attracted crime. And let me see if I can find the picture in the book. Again, the graffiti artists, of course, well, I say artists, there's not a fat lot of art in this graffiti in this one. But then you've got just an abandoned pushchair at the bottom of a staircase, which once led to people's homes. It just really struck me, again, this was a place where people lived, this was their home. But instead of improving these areas, the councils looked to have just basically tried to get rid of them. You say here, only one in, I think, five of the residents that lived here now, only one in five have managed to stay in the area. Can you tell me more about this estate and what's happened since these photographs were taken?
Yeah, so the Haygate Estate opened in the 1970s, and just like you say, it was really meant to be the new standard of living. It was fitted with all the modern accessible things that you would need in this new flat. And I have to believe that people were well-intentioned and really thought that they were creating these neighborhoods, you know, in high-rise buildings. But unfortunately, as with a lot of high-rise buildings across the country and across London as well, they didn't quite live up to their promise. And it did suffer with some crime, although, you know, that's debated by local residents who also say it was a great place to live. So it's always hard to be really nuanced in these conversations as well. Unfortunately, it's a kind of victim of its location. It's in Elephant and Castle, which is historically been an area that not much attention has been given to, but then lo and behold, when people realize how close it is to central London, it becomes very desirable, especially for developers. And so all this area of Woolworth and Elephant and Castle is being transformed, and unfortunately those plans don't leave much space for existing residents. There's actually the research in the book came from a series of blogs from Haygate residents who were leading this campaign, you know, to try and save the estate. But unfortunately, what once was modern and attractive in the 1970s is not going to be so for new Londoners, middle class residents who are looking to buy homes now. And so I think it was only about, well, as you say, you know, one in five who have managed to live in the same area that they've grown up in and that they've known all their lives. Some affordable housing was meant to be given, but as ever, affordable can be anything up to 80% market rate. So London is an expensive city.
It's fair, but you've actually put affordable in a price here, so anything between 350,000 being the minimum price of a home now here, up to 1.1 million. I mean, that's it's not on the affordable scale for most people, I'd have thought.
Which is, you know, out of reach for the people that were living there at the time. And yeah, I mean, it was a lot of these places, you know, they're not, unfortunately, they weren't all uplifting, you know, to write about. London has its fair share of problems, and it's hard in the book with limited space to address these. And I hope that really it just gives people food for thought as they're flicking through the book and seeing some places that were designed to really inspire people, and then some where it just hasn't worked out, and question, you know, how can we do things better in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not somewhere as well that if you didn't live on Haygate, you would have heard about. So I found that a really interesting story in the book. Finally, though, I want to move to a place of work. And one of the reasons is the photo is really striking. Again, I'm just going to flash it up. But it basically looks like a concrete floor with four visible, but let's say three really easily visible corkscrews coming up through the floor. It's quite a striking picture, and this is Millennium Mills in, is this pronounced Silvertown or Silverton or something else?
I say Silvertown. But I might be incorrect. It's a fascinating area of London. Actually, I recently did a virtual tour for the East End Women's Museum as part of Newham Heritage Month. That's actually available free online if people want to know more about Silvertown. It's an industrial hub of London, but it only really got going in the 19th century. And It did that because it basically fell outside of the building regulations. So within the metropolitan area in the 1840s, these building regulations came in to try and stop, you know, smelly, polluting businesses within central London. But this area today, Canning Town, Silvertown, was outside it. And so factories just proliferated in the area, Millennium Mills being one of them, basically.
And so what was this place? What did they use? It says a mill, but what did they do here?
Yeah, so it was a flour mill. Millennium Flour was their best-selling product. And it was absolutely huge. I mean, it was providing flour for across the UK and employed, you know, thousands of workers, a lot of them women as well, actually, because the men might have been working on the docks. And so women were involved in packing and the less kind of heavy labour tasks inside it.
So are these
corkscrews.
are these slides for bags or something?
So as I understand it, the bags would have come down the chutes there to minimize some of the heavy lifting going down between them.
Seems very sensible. I do wonder if anyone ever had a go themselves. It looks
yeah, you do. Oh gosh. Apparently the lifts actually were quite scary, because this was one of the places that I have actually been lucky enough to do a tour of at another time. And the lifts were kind of continuous lifts. So you sort of walked into them, and it just, you know, doesn't bear thinking about that there were sadly some accidents of people getting trapped in all sorts of.
I've been in a lift like that. Birmingham University used to have a lift like that. I don't know if that still works though. Maybe someone's lost their nerve, but it was quite, it seemed okay when I was there, but maybe they need to be maintained very well. I also noticed on these corkscrews, it looks like almost like tally marks on the side. Do you know what they were there for?
So let me have a look at the picture as well. I don't know what the tally marks were for on the side there. As I say, I haven't seen these. This room itself, it's not open to the public just because of how unstable it is. So I don't know what about them. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Is this building? This building is still here then, but obviously then you've only got certain access to access to certain places.
Yeah, so it was actually on it. I can show you what it looks like today, actually. There's another image of it.
Oh, yes, yes.
So it's really striking. I mean, it's a kind of beautiful building and similar to a lot of the buildings in the book. It's constantly under redevelopment, just like Haggerston Baths that we talked about earlier. They've been saying it's going to be redeveloped for about 10 years, but I think they're finally getting around to it now. And of course, it's going to be public realm space, some office space, and then flats, basically. It's an absolutely mammoth space, and the shell of the building still survives today. I visited on a tour for Open House weekend, which, if anyone's not familiar, is a kind of weekend in September where there are buildings not usually open to the public are open for free. So it's a kind of tour guide Christmas. It's great. Favorite weekend of the year. And so it was great to see inside the space there. But it's just been, you know, it is one of these abandoned buildings that has been seemingly left to rot, but not for much longer.
It's always fascinating, especially the ones that just look like everyone just left one day and didn't come back.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, this Millennium Mills in particular as well, because this was actually rebuilt following one of the worst disasters during the Second World War, but not actually a result of bombing. It was the Silvertown explosion of 1917, and a factory that was involved in making TNT exploded, and you know the blast radius could be heard for as far as like the Sussex coast. It was absolutely massive, because this was a storeroom, you know, for TNT. If you're going to pick up something to explode, you absolutely don't want it to be that. So this was this building that you see today was rebuilt following that explosion.
Gosh, wow. When you mentioned explosion, I thought you were going to say because it's a flour mill, and obviously that was one of the dangers of flour mills, wasn't it? Was explosions. But so they've obviously been very careful, and then, oh my goodness.
Yeah, so I mean, it was very close by. I don't know the exact location, although there is a memorial to it today. It wasn't as bad as it could have been because it happened in the evening where there were less people working in the factory, but there were still over about 70 deaths, possibly more. So it was a pretty traumatic event in the history of that area of East London.
Wow. Okay, so I've picked out some of my favourite places. I'm keen to know, do you have a favourite place from the book?
I think I was sort of toying with this because I think it's probably one of the most famous kind of abandoned places. But I think you have to mention kind of Abbey Mills pumping station because it's just so... It's kind of the beacon of abandoned London places, even though it's actually still in use today as part of Thames Water. So I've got the picture here, if I can show you. So as you can hopefully see, it's an absolutely incredible building, and it's known as the Cathedral to Sewage. So it is a sewage pumping station. And I just think it's a fantastic example of how the Victorians in the 19th century, you know, they were so in awe of engineering and of new scientific discoveries. And in order to give it the prestige, they didn't kind of shy away from the kind of nasty elements of it and the functionality. They kind of almost glorified in it, hence all of this beautiful decoration. Yeah, it's just so striking. It's another building that you can quite easily see today if you're walking along a public pathway called the Greenway in Stratford in East London.
Wonderful. One thing about the Victorians as well, I mean, they really, from the outside you'd think it was a public library or museum. But even inside, they don't stop when they go inside as well. They carry on.
There's so many details. It's absolutely exquisite.
Really, yeah. Well,
I was going to say it's very hard to visit Abbey Mills today. They do occasionally run open days, but the good thing about that is that London actually has another of these fantastic places, Cross Ness, which is another sewage pumping station, and that has more regular open days. And again, it's absolutely spectacular, the ironwork, the details. You feel like you're in a church, and then you, in the distance, you can see like these huge levers. I'll show you this one. This one's definitely fine because this is one of my photos. So this is inside Cross Ness sewage pumping station, and again, this is more readily available to visit, so there's a few places in the book where they're quite easily accessible, which is nice for anyone reading.
It's funny that would anyone actually think about visiting a sewage pumping station unless it was suggested? In a previous life I actually worked for a water company on the sewage side, so I'm very familiar with sewage pumping stations, and I can tell you any that are built now are absolutely nowhere near, they're not beautiful in any way, shape or form. They are very, very functional, so thank goodness for the Victorians, to be honest, that we have these sorts of buildings, because otherwise I don't think we'd have anything quite so pretty. But it's the book is fabulous. It's a wonderful collection and record of abandoned London. I think it's a great resource for anyone who is interested in London, I think from any genre, whether you're interested in architecture or social history or the evolution of how places are used and how, you know, human behaviour affects the spaces. It's really, I love it. I'm so, so glad that I've got one of the first copies. Yes, everyone, I did. before we go, where can people find you, your blog, about your tours, and of course, where can they get the book?
Yeah, so my blog is called lookup.london. So all the information is on there because I run walking tours across the capital as well. Best place is probably Instagram, follow on look_up_london. And the book itself, which has been, I know, very annoyingly out of stock, is coming back in stock next week, I am told. And it's available from Foyles and Amazon and Waterstones, and also available internationally as well. So yeah, if you search for Abandoned London, the publishers are Amber, and they have a drop-down menu with all different kinds of options.
It really is good. I really like it. It's nice and in hardback, so it's going to survive as well. So thank you so much for that, Katie. And I'm hoping to come down to London to see you at some point, which would be lovely, and pick your brains, because I just love your Instagram. It's brilliant. There's so many things that people walk past and you're there saying, did you know this? I think there's some railings somewhere. That's one of the first videos I saw of yours, railings that were stretchers in the war. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's really what got me obsessed with London's history. It's those details that are hiding in plain sight that you could walk past every day, and then it's only when someone points it out or you notice that plaque or that architectural detail. So often in London, it's above your eye line, which is why I called the blog Look Up London. And then you realise that it's just never ending. The research and the possibilities of different places you can discover just are endless.
Brilliant. It's excellent. Well, thank you so much for today. And maybe you'll come back and chat to me another time as well about some more bits about London. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.